I have this effect on technology, so I'm not surprised. Are there any questions? Anything to say or ask? Okay. So even though she sees that what's happening in her mind is from the habits that have grown from society and family and so on, telling her what to do, I guess, or not to do. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If like once in a day I will lie down to rest to have more energy later, okay, because it has a goal.
Yes.
But if I would just rest all this nutrition, it's laziness and it's a waste of time.
And what will happen? Okay, so if, could you hear? Probably not. You could? No. Okay, the very fine. So, you know the story though. So, if you sit, you have a goal, so it's okay, but to actually rest, not just once a day, but the whole retreat, is lazy. And when she said the word laziness, she was building up to it more than I did. When she said the word laziness, there was this, in the room. A few people around said, yes. Okay, So sitting is okay because it has a goal. And resting once a day is okay because it has a goal to get rested so you can do. And resting for 7 days because it can't possibly have a goal is laziness. Okay. So then what happens if you're lazy for 7 days?
It's a big thing, but it's
well, you know. So if she would be lazy for 7 days, if she would be lazy, then she would be not doing what the voice says. She would be not doing what she's, what did you say exactly? There's no meaning, no purpose, no deep thing about being lazy. Okay.
And also there is this fear that as much as I letting myself being lazy, I would just become more lazy.
Yeah. The fear that if I let myself be lazy a little bit, then, and she was going like this, then I will just become lazy. It will take over, of course, the laziness. So, okay. So I'd like to, keep you with the question, you, not only you. Although I wouldn't want to give you anything to do, but with the question, is it okay? What is lazy? So, for example, is it lazy to listen to the voice, which is not yours, which doesn't belong to you or your life? When she also said, she half said, with some kind of gesture like this, there's that, all that voice and voices, chorus. And then she kind of, there was some slight gesture down over the other side and down that I kind of know. What did you say? Yeah, I kind of know that it's not all. And then what were you saying?
I don't know if it's 100%.
Yeah, that's what you... Yeah. She doesn't believe in it 100%. But it's taking a big place. Yeah. Okay. So just check how it is for you. Like, what's lazy? And also, it's a good question, like, what would it be? So really, we're talking about wasting our lives, which we don't want to do. And it's not that I want you to waste your life also. So even it can be a good way of keeping the question fresh, both from a love of your life, how precious it is, which then starts to include how it isn't yours, too. Like, the bottom kind of drops out, like, my life? But okay, this life, that life, whatever this is, that we can feel the preciousness of it, and from there, not want to waste it, not want to harm it in any way, whatever it is. Also, we can take a kind of stance, we can take a, through feeling and imagination to the end of this life, what will have been important in the living. What people say, who physically died but then didn't, they talk about love mostly. And they talk about giving. So then maybe that helps us, but we need to have our own investigation. I think we would add not only love and giving, but maybe something like quiet. And I think it would be good to add, we could have a paper on the board and just add. When we take that more seriously, like, not as the voice that we're half listening to, so this is that push-pull, we're half listening to the voice and half not believing it. And then we can't actually live. We can't go either way. Is to take the question more seriously and take it into yourself. Like, okay, that question strikes a chord in me. It strikes a chord. Does that make sense? Do you know that phrase? It resonates. How is it, Ifat? Too fast, sorry. Okay. Ifat is very kindly translating to Mordechai in the back. So what's the first thing that becomes clear if you would take the question seriously? Your life is precious. I know you don't want to waste your life. And that's not the voice, so. We can feel the difference between how the voice talks it and how the heart feels it. How the cells even feel it. And when we come to feel the cells, how the cells feel the preciousness of the life, that even to call it anything, even to call it this life, it makes it smaller, like we don't know what's going on. When we feel into what the cells might, if we could listen or if we could feel into the cells, how they feel about this life, then we can feel even into two layers where there's like the biological preciousness and there's also some other kind of preciousness that isn't biological. That's important also. How do you feel now with the two parts? Mm-hmm. Okay. So she said something touches the heart, and the basic idea is there's not so many words coming, which may be because I'm putting you on the spot. But it looks, the hands are saying, like, almost like I have the right not to put words on this. This is bigger than words.
Also.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any other question? Another question? Yes. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yes. Yeah. 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 Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Great. You said immense resistance, right? Could everyone hear us? Yeah. Could you hear her? You couldn't hear her. I asked if you could hear her. I wanted to repeat the phrase I think I heard. Immense resistance. Yes. Immense, huge. Yeah. It literally immeasurable, immense, immeasurable resistance. Great. And you listen to your inner. That's also what we asked you to do. That's great. So it does happen that it's hard to believe when you've just arrived yesterday, but it does happen that you start to get rested. The body gets rested, and maybe the mind gets rested. Great. And then other things start to happen, which is good. We won't call it the goal. But cool. Good. And what I want to talk about today is a little bit, it's about that being in a mode of discovery. So discovering what is rest. And then what is rested? What is it like to be rested? So things may bubble up, and sometimes they bubble up immensely. And sometimes it seems to be in reaction to the retreat context. Sometimes it seems to be unrelated to anything whatsoever. And still, if we talked individually about deep rest, so that let there be, the body doesn't need to lie down so much anymore. For some people will be lying down more and more and more every day, not because they're tired, but so that's where, if I could keep repeating that, I want you to listen to your inner coach mostly. So when the anger comes up, and when the fight with the role comes up, which is still about you, and it's a great chance because you know that it is. What about a restful depth with that anger? So sometimes you might stay, so-called stay with the anger, but from a restful depth, where you trust that the story isn't all that's going on. The part of you disbelieves the story, and part of you knows that's not all. That's a great way to say it. Part of you knows that's not all. Yeah? Which is partly why you could ask the question instead of leave. So knowing that we can be with what comes up, but not give all of our attention to that. And this is a little bit what I was pointing towards yesterday with the dangerous play metaphor. If we had the goal of going into the difficult emotions when they came up, we would hurt ourselves. If that was our goal, and then we kept our eye only on that ball, we would get so into it that we would forget that that's not all. So what I feel for you specifically is great that the anger came up, and also the immense resistance. To me, that feels like there's a huge amount of space to let that be. That wouldn't always be the case. I wouldn't say that to everyone, I think. It feels like the strength and stability can be there sometimes for that to be big and not all. And then not all means not the end of the story, so, but the end of the story, or the continuation of the story, the end of the story is also unknown. And you're finding it. What this means, kind of simply put, is a really big deal, which is that we can live without the story. It may seem impossible when you, on the first day, if you've just arrived at the retreat and you start to maybe notice how much story is going on all the time. And at the same time, many radio stations on. And it could even sound like, criticism or an insult or something, that could seem impossible today. There's so many radio stations on, and you're saying that it could be, I can live without any of that. So what it means is that the possibility is there that we can live as a human being without that. And the beginning of living without that is living with it, is finding out that it is. And what it feels like. And when there is that steadiness, stability, and kind of warmth, I think, that I feel in you, then instead of a story, the feeling of what's happening leads somewhere. That is the end of those stories. Yeah? Far. It's not, though. It sounds far. I agree. But luckily, it isn't, actually. So, and that's, anyway, what I want to talk about today. And every day. So, this is Wendell Berry, his river, and this is Wendell Berry, his body, with his horses. He's in his 80s. He didn't always look like that. These are all poems called, they're Shabbat poems, actually, Sabbath poems. And his Shabbat was Sunday, so on Sunday he stopped working the farm, and he would go on a walk, and he would write a poem about it. This is from 1993. When my father was an old man, so now Wendell Berry already in 93 is maybe in his 60s. When my father was an old man, past 80 years, so it's lovely to read this poem, by Wendell Berry, who's now in his 80s, about his father when his father was in his 80s. When my father was an old man, past 80 years, we sat together on the porch in silence, in the dark. Finally, he said, "Well, I have had a wonderful life." Adding after a long pause, "And I have had nothing to do with it." We were silent for a while again. And then I asked, "Well, do you believe in the informed decision?" So should we pause about that word, that phrase, informed decision? Decision. Informed. It's okay. Informed. So information. Information has gone into making the decision. Informed decision is a phrase that means before I decide, yes, I go to Israel, I check into all the, is it safe to go to Israel? Am I, who's going to tell, what information am I going to get depending on where I look? My parents are going to say, no, it is not safe to go to Israel. So I usually don't tell them I'm going until I'm about to get on the plane. So they don't worry. And then if I ask my Israeli friends, is it safe? Of course, we live here. And no, Enya. So, informed decision is a good example because where do we get our information from to make the decision? And this, it's a kind of phrase that would be usually used about something important, like what are you doing with your life? So the question of the day. How we don't want to waste our lives. So then, so Wendell Berry asks his dad, is that okay with the informed decision? Wendell Berry asks his dad, well, in the dark on the porch, well, do you believe in the informed decision? He thought some more and at last said, out of the darkness, and I have to just give a pre. They're from where I grew up in the United States, which has a certain accent. And so it goes like this, nah, which means no. But it would be like, nah. He was right, for when we choose the way by which our only life is lived, we choose and do not know what we have chosen. For this is the heart's choice, not the mind's. To be true to the heart's one choice is the long labor of the mind. So I'll read it again, but I'll just say sort of a little bit what he's saying. You may have noticed when you made informed decisions, shall I go on that retreat? You check the website, you talk to people, or whatever. Or you check your belly, I hope. Where do we get the information from? Sometimes we feel really prepared for something and we feel like we've got it all together and that's what we're gonna, okay, yeah. That all makes sense. All those voices agree, basically, is an informed decision. All those voices that are up here agree, is usually what an informed decision is. How well prepared we were for what we thought we were choosing. We thought we were prepared for that retreat because we read the website and we talked to people. And then we got to the retreat, and I was like, really silence? Really lying down all the time? Like, that's wasting my life. And if we would stay with the informed decision, then we would have to leave, because it doesn't fit the information system. But then life goes on. So whether we were prepared or not, something happens. And sometimes the informed decision lands in a good way and sometimes it really doesn't. And we can just say on the side, of course, there are those of us whose habit is to be really chaotic and not prepare and not take care. Like, for some people, to honor the preciousness of your life would be to get a little bit of information, like maybe about how to get there, what to bring. Is there food? Do you have permission from your children to leave, you know, like some basic preparation if your type is to be like not. Okay. Well, do you believe in the informed decision? He thought some more. So this is still dark on the porch in the countryside. So really dark, which is significant in the poem. And at last said, out of the darkness, nah. He was right, for when we choose the way by which our only life is lived, he doesn't say how we live our lives. When we choose the way by which our only life is lived, we choose and do not know what we have chosen. So we come to the retreat, and what we expected of the retreat, some of the expectations will match and some of them won't, but it's mostly coincidence if it matches and if it doesn't. Because it's life. It's not our idea of it. It's not our preparation for it. We choose and do not know what we have chosen, for this is the heart's choice, not the mind's. So this is another little hint here, is sometimes we tell ourselves we're making a really informed decision and we're being very logical and all of that. And what's really happening is that the choice is made from somewhere else and we have excuses, or we think we're doing something, we're actually doing something else. We're either in denial or we're rationalizing, we're giving excuses. Excuses? Yeah? Denial? Okay. So. To be true to the heart's one choice is the long labor of the mind. So just reversing the positions of authority or of leadership. If we would realize that anyway the heart is choosing, so let's say the heart is leading somewhere and we don't let it, we will get sick. We will have an accident. It will not work. We will be miserable, etc. But often anyway, the heart's choice is leading somewhere and somehow it manages to move somehow a little bit. But we're still miserable because we're not with it. And we think we shouldn't or whatever. Yeah? Any questions so far? So what we can do through meditation is starting to open up to feel, what is that heart leadership? We don't invent and create what it feels like. We receive what it feels like in action through the day as it happens. The heart's choice, not the mind's. And so that's partly like, okay, there are these voices. And there's a knowing that that's not all. And so the knowing that that's not all, we find our way into gradually or quickly, whatever way is possible. If we can just go in there, great. But many times it needs to be indirect, because we have so much resistance to going in there because the voices are so sure. So in the story yesterday of the elephant driver's son, Pesa, talking to the Buddha, Gotam. Hello, how are you? Mindfulness, yes, your monks are really doing a good job. I also practice mindfulness at home, Pesa said. Some other people who aren't monks also practice mindfulness from time to time. A little bit maybe proud there, trying to show off a little bit. Or maybe some longing to practice more and feeling defensive. There's something in there. And then, okay, Gotam says to Pesa, so the teacher says to the visitor, by the way, and he's leading somewhere, but it's not clear. No one knows that yet. By the way, Pesa, what do you think about the four kinds of people? What do you think about, or what do you feel about, how are you with the four kinds of people? There's the kind that hurt themselves, the kind that hurt others, the kind that hurt themselves and others, and the kind that don't hurt either. How are you with all that? And Pesa says, well, I'm not okay with anyone except the ones that don't hurt themselves or others, of course. So Gotama gives him like a really kind of, we call it a no-brainer. It's an easy question to answer. Obviously, he says, I feel satisfied. I don't feel satisfied. Pesa, the elephant driver's son, says, I don't feel satisfied with the ones that hurt themselves or others or both. And I do feel satisfied with the ones who don't hurt themselves or others, which I like the choice of word. I feel it feels good in me to connect with that possibility of a human being not harming. And then Pesa leaves and misses the chance to take it somewhere. It says, I gotta go. Got stuff to do. And okay. At your convenience. And so what? Yeah, sorry. Slow. Yes, thank you. Okay. Shall I rewind or is it okay? Okay. This moment in ourselves would be a little bit like the moment I mentioned of the guy on the bus yesterday. I said, I love you. And he was on the bus that really touched him. It was also weird that I said that to him. And then something was rumbling, but it wasn't food hunger. Something was rumbling and it didn't need any more input. It needed space for output, kind of. So when inside some kind of situation happens, or outside some situation happens where we feel a question starting to form, and it starts out easy, like we realize, and Buddha Gotama asks, piss out, why are you satisfied? And why are you dissatisfied with these four kinds of people? And so then it's like, go a little deeper. Go a little deeper. Same like that thought of, I don't want to waste my life. When it turns from, don't waste your life, to, I don't want to waste my life. Wait, I don't want to waste this life, whatever it is. And then it keeps going deeper or more big, immense. And so then Pesa has the chance to say, well, I'm dissatisfied with the ones that hurt, and it takes a much longer time in the text, blah, 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 blah. I'm dissatisfied with the people who hurt themselves or others, because neither themselves or others want to be hurt, basically. They don't want pain, they do want pleasure. And I'm satisfied with the one who doesn't hurt anybody, because nobody wants to be hurt. So it's a very obvious statement, but if the question hadn't been asked, then that wouldn't become obvious. So very similarly to, like, don't waste your life. Like, that's a good question. What's wasting my life? Right. What would be wasting my life? And then really, yeah, right. It is important. I agree, Mom. Okay. And then if we don't get up and walk away and say, I've got things to do, we give a little more space when we feel that rumbling. And if we can give space not to the expectation of finding an answer, again, oh, good, now I'm doing something. I'm going to find an answer. But leaving a lot of room for the ability to feel, both physically and subtly. There have been some really cool studies that have been done about our psychology as humans, about the importance of touch and how much it influences our decision making. So they set up a fake job interview situation. So people were acting as the job interviewers and people were acting as the people who wanted the job coming in to get interviewed. And neither of those people knew actually what the experiment was. They thought it's something about the interview itself. And what the experiment was, is that clear so far? Yeah. The experiment was that if I'm doing the interview, I'm deciding whether I'm choosing you or not you for the job. And I've been given a clipboard. So I've been given a board with paper that I can write, take notes about you while I'm asking you questions and listening. Yeah? And it's all about the clipboard, this study. So some of the interviewers were given clipboards that were like big, heavy, important feeling clipboards. And they would rate, if I'm interviewing you and I've got a big, heavy, like, clipboard in my arm, you're a really serious candidate. You've really got some substance. And if I have a kind of cheap, light, not so well-made clipboard on my arm while I'm interviewing you. You could be the same person. They didn't do that. Then really, I don't think you have what it takes for the job. And I don't have any idea why I'm making this decision. I don't know it's related to the clipboard. And you don't also know that you were chosen or rejected because of the clipboard. So the importance of touch in us and the way that we can use that, which can work as a weakness if we're not aware. So our informed decision is informed by what we're sitting on when we're trying to decide who to marry or like whatever. We can realize that it's a sensitivity and a power. The connection between the mind and the body, the connection between our need to find leadership for the mind, basically. The mind needs something to lead it. And through approaching, through feeling, physically feeling and subtle sensations, I don't mean emotional feeling, and expanding that capacity to feel subtly and physically, we start to get more comfortable and more in tune with and more clear with that part that's not with the voices that knows that's not all. It knows the voices are not all. And then that's not all starts to get more precise. And it gets better timing, like the way that, if we want to call it a voice, it can come through in a voice. It can come through without any words. It can come through in just you find yourself walking. And this is very tricky territory because many, many times, most of the time, when we find ourselves walking the other way suddenly, it's not necessarily from our wisdom. It's from our insanity, from our, maybe we don't want to admit, but we're attracted to that person, so we go a little closer or whatever. Something that we're in denial about that's leading us. And so bringing ourselves more and more at home into our, I can say animal body, or it's not only that though, subtle body also. Feeling capacity, our sensitivity. We start to be more open to all kinds of messages. And we start to be able to feel what has the leadership that the mind would happily follow eventually. In this poem, it's called The Heart's Choice. And then he says, to be true to the heart's one choice is the long labor of the mind. And I love that he sticks that word one in there. To be true to the heart's one choice. This is at the end of our lives. It's really so simple, people say. And sometimes we can get a feeling of that. At the end of life, it's so simple what's important. And it can be complex how that's playing out. Love and quiet and giving. Dignity. But staying true to the heart's one choice. It's not as complicated as we're used to thinking. It is the long labor of the mind. So the mind can help us in the details and the situations to stay true to the heart's one choice. So then Wendell Berry's father, he chose imperfectly as we must. So we are experimenting, therefore we have to have mistakes involved. What we think of as imperfect is essential. He chose imperfectly as we must, the rule of love, and learned through years of light what darkly he had chosen. So he chose darkly means he couldn't know what it was going to be like. And he did his best follow through on his heart's one choice by staying true to the rule of love. And learn through years of light, so that's the daily living is going on, where the mind can be useful sometimes. He chose imperfectly, as we must, the rule of love, and learned through years of light what darkly he had chosen. So to be willing to darkly choose, to blindly choose, it's not the same, we don't think of that as a choice. We would call it a feeling. To darkly choose, to not have a vision of what I think I'm going to get. So the whole goal orientation that we're kind of, we think we're addicted to. To be willing to rumble and feel around in the dark. And then as we feel around in the dark, what that gives us is new eyes. New listening and new feeling. So what darkly he had chosen, his life, his place, our lives. So he's the son who came in to be part of that life of his father. And just as it's not that we choose to have children, or we choose what the child is going to be like, etc. And now comes one he chose but will not see, Emily Rose, born May 2nd, 1993. And I love how he ends with this little rhyme. So his another granddaughter was born. One he chose but will not see. So he's opening what choosing means. Are there questions or comments yet? Okay. Yes. Good. Ifat? It's getting translated. Can't hear you at all. Yes. Good. Good question. Thank you. Toda. I hope that we'll get there. But if not today, we will go into that every day. So I'll read the whole poem through. And that will be it for today. Let's see. So the heart's choice, first of all, to find what that is a discovery, an ongoing discovery. And it's funny, it's a paradox, an ongoing discovery of the one thing. Or better than thing, the one choice, because it's not really a thing. They call love in here. An ongoing discovery of, we could also call it alignment with what's most important. And how we can best know that is how it feels. And it's a little tricky because yesterday, or was that on the weekend retreat, I talked about the different psychologies. Yeah, okay. So we have different ways that our minds work. So some people are really at home with the language of feeling, and they can feel their body easily, and it's how they think also. And other people are more visual or more words or listening. And so you might call it listening rather than feeling. With seeing, it's tricky because it isn't seeing at first. It's through going without, knowing that I don't see. There might be some visual way that helps you go with not seeing and anyway making a best guess. But the kind of trick, in a good way, is that there is in life delight. Delight is, what's the Hebrew for delight? Onig. And when there happens a delight, we can notice how that turns into a story that is then pleasure and pain. That was so good, I want to do that again. That was so good and I can't get it back. And so still, the trick is that we can know that delight comes. And delight is better than that that we call pleasure, where I'm trying to repeat the delight. I'm trying to capture and dominate life's delight. And we do that through the story and the thinking. The idea of that, the memory of that. And so if we can come to bear the peaks of delight that come here and there, let it be so good sometimes. That helps us be less story and thinking oriented, if we just let it be so good sometimes. And also, we start to tune into what I would call a background. We could call it background delight. The mode of discovery, as I mentioned yesterday, has in it, even if I discover immense resistance, there's that, wow. There's the possibility to feel this that I didn't expect. And to notice that there's mystery here. It wasn't what I ordered. It wasn't part of the informed decision. And something in us loves that. Great. The voices are going to be, of course, immense resistance. You're supposed to be resting, but I don't want to rest. Why is she telling me to rest? So yesterday I talked about being less oriented towards negativity, and today we can talk about it in a different way, being less all centered around the story of pleasure and pain. So where something wonderful did happen, or we've heard that it could happen, and then the story of how we get it or we don't get it, doesn't leave so much room for the full receiving of both those here and there great delights, as well as for this background delight. The ongoing discovery of the heart's one choice. So I understand that we would like to just have the final answer and then get on with it. If it's just one choice, okay, so what is it? And it isn't like that. It's better. It's an ongoing discovery of the heart's one choice. And so we'll feel, ah, yeah. And we feel more at home. We feel more relaxed that we can just be as we are. We feel less that we have to be true to who I thought I was. We're less loyal to the personality. And all kinds of discoveries, the yuck and the yum. Yuck and yum? Okay. And it takes a while because there is this sort of addiction. To the idea of pleasure. That keeps us from experiencing the pleasure. Wendell Berry has another poem that talks about a road, and next to the road some birds live among the trees. And the road is busy. I'm going to use the microphone excuse and go a little over. Here in the woods near the road where the public lives, the birds are at their daily work, singing, feeding the young, as if the road does not exist. So this is that part that we know it's not all. We know that road is not all. Here by the loud road, populous and vacant. So that means there's a lot of people and it's empty at the same time. It's a road and it's cars, mostly, I guess. There is a quiet where birds are singing. Here, by the loud road, populous and vacant, there is quiet where birds are singing. So birds are singing, so it's not actually silent, but it's quiet. The birds are busy also. They're not just sitting still. They're not just lying down. Singing, feeding the young, as if the road does not exist. I will read the other poem full, too. As we are now, our orientation is around the voices, which encourage us. So the ones that aren't from our own life and not from what's important in our own life. But we might find a way through that. What are you doing with your life? To what we're doing with our lives. And that whole busy road with all those voices loud, full of voices and also vacant. Vacant gives a little bit the sense of abandoned. And that's how we abandon our life, being so busy with all those voices. There is life going on. Busy and quiet. And we start to, okay, that's not all. That's not all. That's not all. And leaving room, like one of the things that helps us find the open passageway to our life. Sometimes the moments of delight, wah, which don't need to be anything special happening. Also, as we all know, if you think of moments of delight, it can be feeling the rice in your mouth. I remember the first time I came to Israel and I was lying down, I slept. I was up here, there, in the Negev. Lying down, I slept. I woke up, and I heard the garbage truck somewhere. It sounded like a garbage truck to me anyway. And I will never forget that these moments of delight have this way of lasting. They're not weighed with time. The friendliness that came in me with the garbage truck sound . So when we can just pick up the rhythm of how often the voices are going on about not delight, but pain and pleasure. You cannot think about joy. So here's Jay Krishnamurti talking about this. He says, if you understand that where there is a search for pleasure, there must be pain, live that way if you want to, but don't just slip into it. If you want to end pleasure, though, which we wouldn't at first sign up for that, we would want to make an informed decision to end pleasure pain, you must be totally attentive to the whole structure of pleasure, not cut it out as monks and sannyasis do, never looking at a woman because they think it is a sin. Sorry. So not only, like, is it, they think it's a sin to not look, to look at a woman, thereby destroying the vitality of their understanding. So by just cutting out that instead of facing what's happening here, what's at work, they lose a whole source of energy for the ongoing discovery of the heart's one choice, thereby destroying the vitality of their understanding, the aliveness of their ongoing discovery, ongoing homecoming. Then you will have tremendous joy in life by seeing the whole meaning and significance of pleasure and pain. You cannot think about joy. Joy is an immediate thing. And by thinking about it, you turn it into pleasure. Living in the present is the instant perception of beauty and the great delight in it without seeking pleasure from it. Whoa. So we have the road, and it's sometimes I feel it like the busy road, like this little wooden box where we think we live and where we think we're kind of driving. And then it's as if it's on top of this big jellyfish, that's so sensitive and can feel everything. And like an amoeba in the science experiments, they give the amoeba a maze and give food at one part of the maze. And they so quickly find the food. They just reach out into every possible avenue. And then they stay only with the one that brings them to the food. And all the other ones come back home. So, is that a mistake? They went down all the avenues and then one of them had food. You know maze, what a maze is? So that's how we kind of let ourselves feel our way into everywhere. And where there's food, we stay with that. Where there's nourishment, where there's, yeah, this is life. When my father was an old man, past 80 years, we sat together on the porch in silence, in the dark. Finally, he said, "Well, I have had a wonderful life." Adding, after a long pause, "And I have had nothing to do with it." We were silent for a while again. And then I asked, Well, do you believe in the informed decision? He thought some more, and at last said, out of the darkness, "Nah." He was right, for when we choose the way by which our only life is lived, we choose and do not know what we have chosen. For this is the heart's choice, not the mind's. To be true to the heart's one choice is the long labor of the mind. He chose, imperfectly as we must, the rule of love, and learned, through years of light, what darkly he had chosen. His life, his place, our lives. And now comes one he chose, but will not see. Emily Rose, born May 2nd, 1993. Our whole life can be lived without the road. May all beings experience softness and strength. Peace and aliveness. May all beings be liberated. May our lives and our practice be dedicated to the momentum towards liberation for all.